Good evening, everyone. Let's start with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Guru, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, Saints of all religions, we humbly bow to you all. Beloved Master, we thank you again and again for incarnating to guide us out of delusion into thy light. Help us serve as channels to bring your liberating energy to all who will receive it. Om, peace. Amen.
So we want to welcome all of you here tonight and those joining us online in our virtual community. We're sharing with us this evening with them as well. As we've come for Master's Mahasamadhi, we have a beautiful program for you. First, we'll have some music with our choir, then some chanting, and then we'll have a period of meditation. Then we'll listen to an excerpt of Swami Kriyananda's autobiography from the New Path, talking about the event of the Mahasamadhi. Swamiji was present. Then we'll speak a little bit, and then you all will have a chance to come up, offer your devotion to Master, and we have two relics that Lisa brought over from the shrine. One is Master's harmonium and Master's meditation mat. These were from one of his relatives, Mira Ghosh's house in Serampore. Mira Ghosh was the woman that Master picked to marry his older brother's son, Ananta's son. So we can come up a few at a time and touch these relics, and then we'll conclude. So we'll start with our choir.
When it ripples on the river. the way to where sun and moon sing. I laugh now in the summertime when ripples on the river play. I laugh soaring with the meadowlarks. Love has made my heart gay. I laugh soaring with the meadowlarks. Love has made my heart gay. I've known them forever. They've haunted my slumber and called to me out of the deeps of space. The love that they promise has helped me remember another time, a caring embrace. Another time, a caring embrace.
Please join us in singing, O Master.
May the
thy joy fill our days. O Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. Guide all our hopes and all our dreams, past every glow that only sees, into the light, the inner sun, into the truth that we're all one. Help us to find in every hour, in every thought, in every flower, a joy that spans eternity, the truth that makes us ever free. Days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. Oh, Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide.
Sir, I said to Master one day, after you are gone, will you be as near to us as you are now? To those who think me near, he replied, I will be near. His last months passed quickly, far too quickly, for in our hearts we knew that the end was approaching. Master had been staying at his 29 Palms retreat. He returned to Mount Washington on March 2nd, to meet His Excellency Binoy R. Sen, India's recently appointed ambassador to the United States. On the evening of his return, he embraced each of us lovingly and blessed us. To some he gave words of personal help, to others encouragement to be stable in their spiritual efforts, to still others the advice to meditate more. Afterwards I got to see him briefly upstairs, alone. Many times over the past 3.5 years, Master had scolded me, mostly for my slowness in understanding him perfectly, sometimes for not weighing in advance the possible consequences of my words. I knew that he often said, I scold only those who listen, not those who don't. But in my heart there lingered a certain hurt. Try as I would, I couldn't rationalize it away. For some months I had been hungering for a few words of approval from him. Now, alone with me, he gazed into my eyes with deep love and understanding and said, You have pleased me very much. I want you to know that. What a burden lifted from my heart at these few simple words. On Tuesday, March 4th, the ambassador and his party visited Mount Washington. I served Master and his guests in his upstairs interview room. During their visit, Mr. Ahuja, India's Consul General in San Francisco, remarked to Master, Ambassadors may come and ambassadors may go. You, Paramahansaji, are India's real ambassador to America. Thursday evening, March 6th, Master returned from a ride in the car. He had asked Clifford Frederick, who was driving, to take him onto Rome Drive, behind Mount Washington. There, gazing at the main building, he remarked quietly, It looks like a castle, doesn't it? The monks had just finished their group practice of the energization exercises when Master's car entered the driveway. As we gathered around him, he touched each of us in blessing, and then spoke at length about some of the delusions devotees encounter on the path. Don't waste your time, he said. No one can give you the desire for God. That is something you must cultivate yourselves. Don't sleep a great deal. Sleep is the unconscious way of contacting God. Meditation is a state beyond sleep, superconsciousness, as opposed to subconsciousness. Don't spend too much time joking. I myself like to laugh, but I keep my sense of humor fully under control. When I am serious, nobody can tempt me to laugh. Be happy within, grave, but ever cheerful. Why waste your spiritual perceptions in useless words? When you have filled the bucket of your consciousness with the milk of peace, keep it that way. Don't drive holes in it by joking and idle speech. Don't waste time on distractions, reading all the time, and so on. If reading is instructive, of course it is good. But I tell people, if you read 1 hour, then write 2 hours, think 3 hours, and meditate all the time. No matter how much this organization keeps me busy, I never forego my daily tryst with God. In the basement, minutes later, Master saw a box of green coconuts that had just arrived from Abby George's brother in Florida. Back at the car, Divine Mother was trying to tell me these coconuts had come, but I didn't listen. I was talking too much. Master, laughing genially, opened a coconut and drank from it. But his enjoyment seemed to me tinged with unreality. I looked into his eyes and saw them deep, still completely untouched by what he was doing. In retrospect, it seems like the heartiness of one who knew he was bidding us goodbye, but didn't want us to know that he was doing so. Catching my glance, he became all at once almost grave. "I have a big day tomorrow," he said. Walking toward the elevator, he paused at the door, then repeated, "I have a big day tomorrow. Wish me luck." The following day, March 7th, he came downstairs to go out. He was scheduled to attend a banquet that evening at the Biltmore Hotel in honor of the Indian ambassador. "Imagine," he said, "I've taken a room at the Biltmore. That's where I first started in this city." Then again, he repeated, "Wish me luck." Master had asked me to attend the banquet with Dick Hames, the popular singer and movie actor. Dick had recently become a disciple and had taken Kriya initiation from me. Years ago, Master had said, "When I leave this earth, I want to go speaking of my America and my India." And in a song about India that he had written to the tune of the popular song, "My California," he paraphrased the ending of that popular version with the words, "I know when I die, in joy I will sigh for my sunny, grand old India." Once too, in a lecture, he had stated, "A heart attack is the easiest way to die. That is how I choose to die." This evening, all these predictions were to prove true. Master was scheduled to speak after the banquet. His brief talk was so sweet, so almost tender, that I think everyone present felt embraced in the gossamer net of his love. Warmly he spoke of India and America, and of their respective contributions to world peace and true human progress. He talked of their future cooperation. Finally, he read his beautiful poem, "My India." Throughout his speech, I was busy recording his words, keeping my eyes on my notebook. He came to the last lines of the poem, "Where Ganges, woods, Himalayan caves, and men dream God, I am hallowed, my body touched that sound." Sa'd became a long, drawn-out sigh. Suddenly, from all sides of the room, there came a loud cry. I looked up. "What is it?" I demanded of Dick Hames, seated beside me. "What happened?" "Master fainted," he replied. "Oh, no, Master, you wouldn't faint. You've left us." The forgotten playwright in me cried silently, this is too perfect a way for you to go, for it to mean anything else. I hastened to where Master lay. A look of bliss was on his face. Virginia Wright was stooped over him, trying desperately to revive him. Mr. Ahuja, the Consul General, came over to me and put an arm around my shoulders to comfort me. Never, dear friend, will I forget that sweet act of kindness. They brought Master's body to Mount Washington and placed it lovingly on his bed. One by one we went in, weeping, and knelt by his bedside. Mother, cried Joseph, oh, mother, indeed, Master had been a mother to us all. Ah, and how much more than a mother. Miss Lancaster gave me an anguished look. How many thousands of years it took, marveled Laurie Pratt, gazing upon him in quiet awe, to produce such a perfect face. Later on, after we'd left the room, Fay remained alone with Master's body. As she gazed at him, a tear formed on his left eyelid and slowly trickled down his cheek. Lovingly she caught it with her handkerchief. She would always preserve it. In death as in life, he was telling his beloved disciple, and through her the rest of us, I love you always, through endless cycles of time, unconditionally, without any desire except for your happiness forever in God.
What a beautiful account of those last days and last moments of Master's life. Davy and I'll speak just briefly. The movie, The Answer, which is about the beautiful relationship between guru and disciple, between Swami and Master, ends with Master's passing. And those of you who have seen it, and those who will see it on Sunday evening, will see that that very last scene where the monks and Daimata are saying goodbye to Master, the movie ends with Master appearing briefly beyond the body, just as a sign. Now, I don't think that was literal, but it was true. Master did appear in the sense that he was still present in the hearts and minds of all those there. At any rate, that last appearance, and then he fades away. The question for all of us is, how can we keep him more close to ourselves, more open, more present? He gave us the most important thing, which we the recording started with, to those who think me near, I will be near. It's as if we have a telephone number for him. And it isn't a physical phone, nor will we hear a physical voice, likely. Nonetheless, we have a way of connecting with him. And that is simply to think that he's near. As Swami has often sung that beautiful Bengali song, it's a song to Divine Mother, in which she says, ask of me salvation, but not my love and devotion, because when you ask those of me, when I give those to you, I give myself away. Naturally, it's a little play on what to really ask of Divine Mother. So how do we think Master near? Mostly not with the mind, but with the heart. The heart is the receiving station for our consciousness. So try not to think him near so much as to feel him near. Now we may say, oh, that's hard. It isn't hard. You can do it right now, right in this instant. It's simply a choice. What's hard is to remember to do it in the midst of the swirling involvements of life. life's with all its drama, its ups and its downs, equally drawing our attention. But if we can just remember to pull back and to feel that Master is near, for those who are helped by an intellectual statement, there are hundreds of television stations in this room right as we speak. If we had the receiver, we could pick up any one of those television stations. Likewise, Master, Swami, all the great masters are present in this room at this very moment. If we had the receiver, we could pick up their signals. And that receiver is in our heart and in our consciousness. And so it's not difficult to understand in concept. It's difficult to convince the mind, which is drawn outward through the senses. It's difficult to convince that mind and convince the heart that these realities are true. But as we think them true, they are true. As we think Master near, he is near because he's already there. All that's lacking is our thought and our love. I want to end by reading his beautiful poem, his advice to his devotees. This is his beautiful letter and poem. When I am only a dream, please close your eyes and realize that this is not just, I don't know, a sweet sentiment. This is Master talking individually to each of us, telling us how to connect with him. I come to tell you all of him and the way to encase him in your bosom and of the discipline that brings his grace. Those of you who have asked me to guide you to my beloved's presence, I warn you through my already, I'm going to. I can read more easily with these. To those who have asked me to guide you to my beloved's presence, I warn you through my silently talking mind, or speak to you through a gentle, significant glance, or whisper to you through my love, or loudly dissuade you when you stray away from him. But when I shall become only a memory, or a mental image, or a silently speaking voice, when no earthly call will ever reveal my whereabouts in unplumbed space, when no shallow entreaty or stern stentorian command will bring from me an answer, I will smile in your mind when you are right, and when you are wrong, I will weep through my eyes, dimly peering at you in the dark, and weep through your eyes, perchance. I will whisper to you through your conscience, and I will reason with you through your reason, and I will love all through your love. When you are able no longer to talk with me, read my whispers from eternity. Eternally through it, I will talk to you. Unknown, I will walk by your side and guard you with my invisible arms. And as soon as you know my beloved and hear his voice in silence, you will know me again more tangibly than you ever knew me on this earth's plane. And yet, when I am only a dream to you, I will come to remind you that you too are naught but a dream of my heavenly beloved. And when you know you are a dream as I know now, we will ever be awake in him.
Well, I think a question that I know I have asked myself, and I imagine you have asked yourself as well, is how do I fit into this grand picture? We read these beautiful stories of Master's life and can hear in Swamiji's recounting the extraordinary depths of his devotion for his guru. And it's all wonderful. But then sometimes we pause and we pull back and we say, but is this mine? Where do I fit into this grand, these grand souls who have touched God and merged with God? What is my life? Am I connected with all of this? I know I love Master, but what is my part to play in all this? And I want to read to you a little bit, a short excerpt from Swami's autobiography, The New Path. This is the same chapter that we read the excerpt from, but it's the beginning of it. And when I read this a few years ago, this passage, it had such a profound effect on me, because I felt this is how I fit in, and it's how we all fit in. Swamiji writes, in the nebulous gases of infinite space, the atoms drift about at great distances from one another. The average, so I have read, may be as much as 17 miles. Much too far for their gravitational fields to attract one another. But if two atoms happen to drift together, their combined field makes it easier for them to attract a third atom. For three, it is still easier to attract a fourth. Thus, an occasional ball of matter keeps on growing until its gravitational field encompasses at last a radius of many millions of miles. At some point in this process, a mighty implosion occurs as nebulous gases are sucked inward from vast distances. The gravitational force of this huge mass becomes so great that changes occur within the structure of the atoms themselves. A shining star is born. The soul, similarly, in its gradual progress toward divine wisdom, develops the, quote, gravitational power by which it attracts and holds the understanding it needs for enlightenment, until at last, in the firmament of living beings, it becomes a veritable star. In the same way, too, the soul develops the gravitational pull to form meaningful and lasting relationships with other souls. Gradually, in its outer life, it and others with whom it is spiritually compatible form great families of souls that return to Earth or to other planets to work out their salvation, not only inwardly on themselves, but by interaction with one another. The stronger the family, spiritually speaking, the greater its attractive pull on new souls that may still be wandering in search of an identity of their own. A family evolves with its individual members. At last, it too becomes a star in the firmament of humanity, and begins to produce great souls of self-realization. As spiritual stars, such great families become powerful for the general upliftment of mankind. Like stars, too, they then draw planets of less evolved families into their beneficial auras, vitalizing them with rays of divine truth. Such families are like mighty nations. To them is given the real task of guiding the human race, not in the way governments do, by official ordinances, but by subtler spiritual influence. Yogananda's is one such spiritual family. His forms part of a greater spiritual nation of which Jesus Christ and Sri Krishna in this age, Babaji, are also leaders. Yogananda, like William the Conqueror at Hastings, came to America to establish a beachhead, not in this case of worldly conquest, but of divine communion. Many have been born and are being born in the West to assist him in his mission. Many others are being attracted to it for the first time by the radiant magnetic influence, the spiritual gravitational field it has created. So this is a very profound passage, because it helps us to understand how all of this works. When I first came to Ananda, it was 50 years ago, I didn't know that I would give the rest of my life to this, but such was the power of the gravitational field, the spiritual field of Master and of our great teacher Swamiji, that we were magnetically drawn. And so I see sitting here in this room some new faces. You are being drawn. You are being drawn by this magnetism, not personal, not person to person, but just as it's described, a great star is born, and these spiritual families are magnetic stars. And so we all, some of us will be teachers, some of us will be farmers, some of us will be cooks, some of us will be musicians. It doesn't really matter. We're just part of this orbiting star that God has sent to the world. And what a great joy to understand that other families will be drawn here, just as the groups that come and spend time at the expanding light, and they're magnetized, they're blessed by the energy that's here. And people in China and in Venezuela and in Ecuador, they feel the pull of this magnetism, and they too are drawn. And it becomes like an unstoppable wave, really. We look at the world around us, and I can become very discouraged. How can people live this way? How can they be so dishonest? How can they be so selfish? How can they be so blind? But that's not what's really going on. What's really going on is every soul on earth is being drawn towards the light in his own way. And how fortunate we all are to have been drawn into the magnetic field of this great master, and through the vehicle of our great teacher, Swami Kriyananda. As time goes by, I appreciate more and more what he gave us, because I know I never could have followed this path without his guidance. I was not clear enough, and I would have been drawn away. But Swami's magnetism was strong, and his alignment with Master was strong. And he pulled us all with the gravitational field of his devotion for God and Guru. And bit by bit, we realize that's all we ever were, that's all we ever knew, that's all we ever wanted, was to feel the Guru's presence in our heart. And so, in the year ahead, this year of Ananda's 50th anniversary, where we're dedicating this magnificent new temple, We're so fortunate that it's all coming together. But in this year, let us not think only of our own spiritual growth or our own life problems. Let's think of Ananda and Master's family as a beautiful magnetic star and shine that light as strongly as you can in prayer, in meditation, in service, in your consciousness. Shine that light of the great masters of this star out into the world, unimpeded. And then that star, someday the star will be over. And someday this little ball of earth will be over. But it doesn't matter. That's not even the story. The story is the joining together, one by one, of souls into God's light, and all the little dramas on earth are pale in comparison to the bigger story. So thank you for being a part of my family. When I listened to the music, the singing, and the chanting, I just thought, we're so fortunate to share in this incredible magnetic ray of devotion and purity of heart and self-offering. So we want to invite you all now to come up. We'll have some quiet chanting, and come up two or three at a time, and don't spend too long, because otherwise we'll be here far into the night, which I suppose is okay too. But come up and you can just touch the harmonium and Master's meditation mat and try to feel the magnetic power of his consciousness, which drew each one of us here in this moment in time.
Seeing thee, my Lord. From delusion, Guru image of Brahma, God Christ.
Let's close with a prayer together. Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Friend, Beloved God,
Great Masters,
Jesus Christ,
Babaji Krishna,
Lahiri Mahashaya,
Swami Sri Yukteswarji,
Beloved Guru,
Paramahansa Yogananda,
Saints of all religions,
humbly we bow to you all.
Beloved Guru,
awaken us
to thy presence within.
Transform us
into thy consciousness,
and act through us
to bring thy blessings and thy divine love
to all we meet.
Om. Peace. Amen.